Turuntuset tulee jo on äl.
Our main topic today will be about finding new trends. And to introduce the topic, I would like to say that that information about what is happening in the future is one of the most important things for entrepreneurs and for anyone working in marketing. But in Estonia, we often feel that trend info is not easily findable. It means that there are so many predictions for trends, but for businesses, it's really difficult to know what is going to become a trend, what should be taken seriously, is there any changes in the trends? So there is a lot of information, but really difficult to know more concretely what is going to happen. And of course, what we see that it's difficult to predict how long is a trend going to be or what is happening there. So there is so many things about trends, and we Estonians here are not very good in the trend field. So, Kristiina, let's start from the very beginning. What is a trend? Can you explain us, and how do the trends appear?
Yeah, I guess I have a quite unique and peculiar way of looking at trends, because for me, a trend is always an unmet need and it's always an emotion. I am never tracking a product or a service and experience. I'm always hunting an emotion. And I really, really feel that trends are created by sensing the air. And as I said earlier, a trend is the future interpretation of an unmet need. So whatever people aren't getting in their day-to-day lives and the craving for it, understanding this emotional driver is key, because it's this emotion that actually drives all future product and service developments. So a really quick example of this could be something like in relation to the beauty industry. Like, the more wired and linked in we become, the more we crave compensatory human contact. So the physical touch, not our iPod touch. So things like four-handed massages, partner yoga, picking your own herbs from the spa's garden for your facial, touching Mother Earth, etc., become more and more important. And I also don't believe in new ideas per se. I don't believe in that there's one singular new idea, just new combinations. And I really subscribe to the theory that these new combinations come from combining general and abstract knowledge with also specific knowledge and intuitive knowledge. And it's almost being able to kind of say, we exist within an ecosystem. We're not an isolated individual part. So my job is really just reading all the different particles in the air.
So does it always mean that if you say here that you are watching what is happening and then you kind of, how to say, turn it another way around? If we are too connected, then we want to be less connected. If we are less connected, we want to be more connected. Or is it oversimplification?
Oh, that's definitely part of it. And I think you've just hit a really, really interesting point, which is basically why so many people find trends so difficult to understand in some sense is because it's so contradictory. You know, and I love the quote, I think it was by F. Scott Fitzgerald, which said, the sign of intelligence is almost being able to hold two opposing viewpoints in the mind at the same time and not go insane. I always joke my job is not to go insane. But what that actually means is, how do we exist in the realm of both and, not either or? And many of us in this are in a very black and white thinking. And it's a trends is something where you're going to have to be comfortable with contradiction. You're going to have to be very comfortable with and become very familiar with sitting in the unknown. It's almost, this kind of work is almost about living the question and not, while most of our business world is all about getting the answer. But trends is really about living the question.
If we go more into detail about the trends, how long does a trend last? Are there any averages that it should be, I don't know, 1 month or 1 year or 10 years?
Well, I guess it's one of those things to really understand the difference between a trend and a fad. So my work is, I'm not doing the work that's like brown is the new black. I'm not doing those superficial, things that change with the fluctuation of the wind. For me, I'm really concerned about trends. Like I always believe that there's an inner and an outer quality to a trend. So just as we might be concerned about the pollutants in our terrestrial rivers, we're also concerned with an environmentalism for our mind. We don't want the pollutants in the rivers of our mind through advertising and bombardment of messages. So I feel that part of it is most often what where people get very caught up in is the stuff that burns away in the fringes of the margin. And my work is really, really concentrated on not working out what's next, but what's important. Because when you know what's important, you'll figure out what's next. But many of us in industry and business, we just care about what's next. And if we keep our focus always on that, you actually lose the very thing that will take you to the future, which is what's important. And I think that's really important to understand about trends. So much of it is around intuition, and that's a knowledge that goes beyond the intellect. It's letting go of knowledge of the senses and the intellect to relax into a silence and into the realm of feeling, the gut feeling, the hunch, and knowing without needing reasons. And I really, really feel we're only as powerful as our capacity to receive. And insight, because that's a real trendy thing at the moment. Lots of marketers, they're always about, what's the consumer insight around this? Well, insight only ever visits like a quiet mind and a beautiful feeling. It doesn't visit a very busy mind that's stressed and anxious. And I really think that, I feel that everyone can do what I do. I don't think my skill is any way peculiar or unique, but I've just learned how to turn my mind into a blank canvas so I can receive impressions. But most of us, we're so busy in our to-do list that we don't create that space for the beautiful feeling and butterfly almost of instinct and insight to come and visit us.
I have to be honest, it seems to be rather, let's say, mystical, isn't it?
Well, I think it is, and I think there's so many people out there in this realm of marketing and insights and behavior, futurism, and my element almost of it is my world is the realm of feeling. I almost sense a future. I don't think one. And I think that we have too many bean counters and number crunchers that try to predict a future from the mind through number, through rationality, through sole use of the intellect. I'm not discounting any of those. But I actually, for me, the feeling part of it, the sensing part of it, is just as important as numbers on a spreadsheet or the latest statistics from the Bureau of Statistics. I really, really actually feel that, well, I guess it's a bit controversial to say, as a futurist, I don't really almost believe in the future, because the future is just a thought form. And the reason so many people love the future and love talking about the future and go to conferences on the future is because it's just a lot of talk. We love the future because we don't have to do any work there. And I think the real, I always say I'm a nowist, like N-O-W-I-S-T, that You birth the future in the now moment. Too many of us exist in magical thinking. We believe that the grass is greener over there and not over here. We think that there will be different to where we are at the moment. And too many of us use the future to try to escape into it. But I'm far more one of those people that I want to meet the future in the eyes, but by acquainting and really living what is in my present moment and experience.
Does it mean so that part of your work is kind of collecting the information, going through the reports, meeting different people, exchanging ideas, and then you summarize it using your best intuition and putting it together in order to understand what you think based on the information, how it's going to be?
Yes and no, but exactly what you said was correct, but I do the order in the other way.
Really?
So I always begin with my intuition, because what most people do is that they start with the research, and then out of that they try to get a hypothesis. While I always start with a hypothesis or an intuitive feeling, and then I use the research to back it up, because you know, my intuition drives me, and I love meeting like-minded and curious people and having breathtaking conversations. And I think it's what you do within that intuitive world is you find another way of looking at the world. There's a wonderful aha moment that actually happens in trends research where when all your disparate sources of information, your gut hunch, your intuitive feel, your data and your statistics and your facts, almost where all these weak signals in a way start synthesizing into a resounding strong signal, which gives you a purpose and a direction to follow. But, you know, to get inspired, I browse galleries, I channel surf, I eavesdrop on other people's conversations, I read a mixture of magazines which I have no personal interest in and that aren't targeted to me. And within that disinterest and dislike, almost in a way, are words and phrases of interest that start calling to me. Same with song lyrics, for example. So I ask myself, what is this one specific line in this particular verse saying to me? Why is it resonating? How can I transform the essence of this into another form? But first, I always begin with my intuition, and only then will I go to research. And that's, you're absolutely right, that a lot of it is, you know, you've almost... It's really about being able to understand the philosophy and the emotion and the values that drive a trend, because these are really, really hard things for actually competitors to copy. You know, I always say, I have a lot of clients in the luxury industry, and I say, you know, luxury is really being redefined as products and services and experiences that deepen one's understanding and appreciation of life. So events and people and places and moments, anything that can actually help unlock the cultural, natural and traditional richness of the world. Well, that's really what luxury is about. So a handbag design is really easy to copy, much harder to imitate is a sensation, a mindset and a way of looking at the world. And again, it comes back to what I said earlier. It's not just about discovering what's next, but also what's important.
Absolutely. has there happened often that you don't find research backing up the insight you have or the first cues you have? Or is it always that you find something that you can say that, okay, my intuition was right and this is going to be a trend?
Yeah, and I think that's a really another fascinating point to discuss, because rather than being spot on or absolutely correct or even wrong, I think it's far more about reading possibilities. So I always say it's really not past, present, future, but past, present and potential. So I'm really I'm living in the world of potentiality. And so when you're in that world of the possible, Well, whether it manifests into a tangible product or service, that's another thing entirely. And I think what you're doing for clients is you're laying out the landscape and the possibilities of what could happen. So possible interpretations of futures, plural, not a singular future, but scenarios of futures, plural. And not all trends drop. They don't all manifest, but the skill lies in reading the air. There are no guarantees. But I always, you know, as Peter Drucker, a very famous management consultant, said, you know, if you can see the future, build it. And I think it's almost like when you're working with a client, the certainty comes through the conviction of their beliefs of making an imagined future real. So I really feel that this realm is a partnership and it's a co-creation. I don't think you really outsource it to a futurist or a trend forecaster or a cool hunter or a style gatherer. It's really about a dialoguing of a perceiving and a sensing of what wants to be born and what's the best way to bring that through.
How many different trends you can, let's say, watch at the same time? Is it about one or two? Is it that you feel that there is something coming, you have to work with it, and then there are ideas for the next one? Or do you have several of them in the spotlight at the same time and you try to understand what becomes more important and what becomes less important?
Yeah, I think that's, again, another really fascinating point, because many of us, there's this wonderful line, I think, by the artist Hans Kaufmann, where he said something like, remove the non-essential so the essential may speak. And I think at the moment in this current content and information overload that we exist, we've really lost the skill of discrimination and also the ability to perceive. So at the moment, we feel that everything is important and every information and content and piece of data is something I've got to scour over. And I don't believe that's the case. And, you know, I wrote a book on the patterns of nature. And when I talk, it's called Grace and the Wind. And in the book, when I talk about understanding the tide, I always kind of say, you know, everyone is trying to catch every wave, every information and content wave, but the real skill comes in understanding that not every wave is meant for you, not every wave has your name on it. And when you have that almost a certainty within yourself, a lot of waves can wash through you and pass you. You don't have to exhaust yourself trying to chase them all. And I think that's what's happening at the moment is we are really, really, really suffering from this feeling of I must catch every wave, almost this deluge of content overload, when it really isn't necessary. But because we've lost that art of being discriminating and saying, you know, wow, do I really need to know this? Because there's so much fear around at the moment about we've got to, I always kind of say to my clients, you know, my job is not to be, you know, the library. My job is to be the librarian, to be the director, to be able to channel the energy to where it needs to go. While I feel at the moment too many people are trying to be the library.
Yeah, absolutely. And this is, I think, that that most of the companies might wait for someone comes and tells, this is the future, take it or leave it.
Absolutely. And I think it's almost one of those things that's a very, like, you know, there's a difference between making things happen and letting them happen, between active principles and receptive principles. And I always feel it's a dance. You know, it's sometimes, you know, you've got to almost stake a claim, and other times you've got to read what the market is telling you. And because we almost don't have this fluidity, this agility, this flexibility, this nimbleness, not just within our companies, but within our own minds, that flexibility, it's why we really struggle. And sometimes we actually want others to tell the future for us. But I always keep saying, you are your best fortune teller yourself. You don't need to go see someone else. You are your own fortune teller. Just pull out your own crystal ball out of your bag.
But what happens when, let's say, you and one of your clients have worked really hard to try to define the either a trend or kind of the future unmet need, if I put it so. But what happens if it doesn't realize, if there was actually no need or it was much less than you expected because there were some other type of needs maybe working against it?
Well, again, wow, you're asking such brilliant questions. I love it. A lot of it that we forget about is in our culture at the moment, especially in the West, is what I'm saying here. We've sort of become attached to outcome and result. Process almost means nothing at the moment. And again, that's so much because we live so much in the rational mind. You know, the heart has almost been deemed a useless barometer. And again, we've just become, again, it's almost very much about the destination and not about the journey. And because so much, again, expectation is put on a one singular final point in one way, we can only be disappointed. And I think part of it is, again, why we get so confused around the future and also things, also like concepts like balance. We think that balance is a final static point. It's not. It's very dynamic, and same with the future. But we almost, a lot of the times, because we don't like uncertainty and we don't like the unfamiliar, so we want to make everything certain and concrete and fixed, that we want to, I mean, there's this really, really lovely saying, I think it says, to define is to destroy and to suggest is to create. And so often we almost can't sit within the ambiguity. It's very uncomfortable. Like if a client comes back to you, say, what do you mean you don't know? And I'm like, well, not knowing is a really wonderful place to be. But we always want the fixed, the known, and the results. But that rigidity is actually what prevents the birth of true creativity and innovation and ingenuity.
As I understand, the end point is not important. The way towards the point is.
They're both important. It can't just be the end. And like, you know, it's almost like I say sometimes to my clients when they put a PowerPoint together, and you know, we've all been there and done that. We're on a deadline. We're tired. We don't care. You know, but then when we present it, you know, we forget that actually the same energy we put into the PowerPoint is the same in the delivery. We kind of keep trying to separate them. And what I'm kind of, I really want to say is that, you know, the process is just as important as the outcome. And, you know, I just in one of the local newspapers had an article here published on the future of food. And I said, you know, basically that how we eat is just as important as the specifics of what we eat. So we're again just concerned about with the what, but you know, there's that wonderful saying, you know, how you do anything is how you do everything. And I think that, you know, the how, which is really all around our habits and our behaviors and our way of being, that's the game changer. But the reason most brands and marketers don't want to spend any time there is because if you've ever tried to change a habit in your own personal life, you will understand how difficult it is. And it's almost our habitualness. It, you know, there is almost no such thing as competition. The only competition is yourself. And it's actually your habituated ways of thinking, because to really be able to create, it requires an ability to move into the uncertain and the unknown. And for a lot of people, that's quite traumatic. And I have got a love of the human psyche, and what I've understood by understanding the human psyche is whenever you put it into the unknown and the uncertain, it always, no matter how much it wants the new, the different, the innovative, the creative, the inspiring, it will always go back to the habitual known. And that's why we all can talk a great game about the future, but very few of us live it, because a vision is only as good as it's embodied and lived.
Absolutely. Are there Just almost the final question that are there any, let's say that are there any special places that that you see the kind of the inspiring signals about how the future is going to be or how our emotions are going to develop?
Yeah,
some important places on the earth?
Well, I lived in Tokyo for a couple of years, and people used to always say to me, wow, that's the center of trends. And I'm like, no, it's not. Tokyo is the most conservative place that I've ever lived. I lived there because I liked it, not for my work. And I think that's, again, almost a bit of a misnomer in the sense that trends really only come out of New York, London and Tokyo and possibly Paris. I really don't believe that. I don't know if you've ever heard that saying where, you know, often you can be in a cocktail party or something like that, and you always think the conversation on the other side of the room looks more exciting, and you finally make your way and break your way into that conversation, but then you see another conversation that looks super duper interesting and all the rest of it. And I think you finally get to a certain age where you just go, I am the party. I am the party. So I actually think it doesn't matter if you're in Tallinn or if you're in Adelaide like I am in now, or, you know, whether you're somewhere in Mongolia, the trends are still there. They don't just reside in one geographical place. What you actually require is a mind and a heart that is able to perceive them. But yes, sometimes I agree. Being in a beautiful countryside or with a really beautiful a place that has an ocean view and a lovely community feel, it could help you be more perceptive. But again, I think sometimes we keep, again, we're back into that, what we were saying earlier, that there is better than here. So if we keep thinking New York and London is where it's all at, we keep missing the present moment. And the present moment is the most important. It's the only way that we can actually create. It's the only, it's our point of power and the only moment of time that really matters.
Very good. It's a very good suggestion. And my final question from this topic is that, mm-hmm. can you tell us what are the, I don't know, let's say 1 to 3 most important trends what you see that might influence us, let's say, in a 10 years time?
Yeah, I mean, of course, you know, but as we've been speaking, my specialism is the emotional intuitive realm. So I, you know, of course I could mention obvious things like, you know, big data, geographic shifts, you know, global citizens, the influence of the cloud, urbanization, aging populations, the health revolutions, robotics, complexity management, global inequality, female leadership, I mean, gamification, resource scarcity. Oh my gosh, I could go on and on and on and on.
It was so much.
That's not my realm. So for me, if I had to say one thing, I would say it's really, you know, how do we live in tune with nature? And like I said earlier, my book, Grace in the Wind, it's an allegorical novel. It's about how we can intuit, embody, and live the patterns of nature. And nature is really the archetype of death and rebirth. And most people really miss this. They want the new, they want the innovation, but they don't. There's an element of destruction that comes with creation. And that's so key to be able to understand. So I'd say the first trend or anything is really to understand rhythm in all its forms. The second thing I'd actually say is get out of future preoccupation. Life is far more about being in the present and thinking more of sensing the future in the now rather than theorizing it as a thought form. And thirdly, I think the most a trend that will dominate is, you know, you're asking me this question on May 11 in 2015, but on May 11, 2025, I don't know what my mind is going to be like, what mind I'm going to have. And often the key trends are something that is unfathomable for us now. And I think that's something that we keep asking the same questions to a time and a place and an energy that may be completely different, where this kind of questioning won't exist. So I think it's I always kind of joke when if you know the comic series The Jetsons, well, yes, they might have been flying around with space packs on their backs, but the mother was still at home with a nuclear family and things like this. It's almost sometimes the future is something that, it has no connection and no relevance to where we are in the now moment. And that's why so often, that's why the present moment is so important, because that's what we actually end up living. We drag and create it with us. So it's so key to be able to place yourself in a time space where the known and the familiar and the questions that you ask now aren't actually even relevant. So my three would be things that I think that will influence us over the next 10 years is, firstly, how to live in tune with nature. Second is what we're going to do about our obsessing over the future. And the third is almost the skill in how we actually learn to live and dance in the unknown.
Thank you. Very, very interesting trends. I think that maybe our listeners didn't find them yet, and I would be really happy if they would think about it more and think that how it will influence their lives. The very last question here. Usually we talk about marketing a country, and my question would be that how should trend information be used to market a country?
Yeah, I mean, I think that basically it's around how do you integrate the national consciousness of the country into its brands. So it's really being clear about what are the associations with the country, whether it's real or perceived. And really getting it back down to, my background is in anthropology. So the bedrocks of culture, behavior patterns, traditions, arts, beliefs, institution, language, and how we can communicate these in a contextually relevant way with emotional impact. It's not just considering where you want to be as a country, but again, how you want to be. What's the design DNA? You've got to really plumb the national soul for inspiration. What are the national characteristics, the identity, the attitudes, the behavior? Look at someone like Paul Smith, who wants his designs to evoke British individuality and eccentricity, or Mulberry's vision to be the English lifestyle brand, And what we're also seeing is obviously regional branding beginning to increase. So in my home state, Maggie Beer's food products being known for being a Barossa Valley tradition. But then we look at, brands like the Spanish band Camper, who, they really emphasize the local and the rural over the global and the urban. And they've built a whole mind style positioning around loneliness, walk, don't run. And I think the founder once said something like, we are part of globalization, but we get our values from the Mallorcan countryside. So I think, it's how do you exist in the world? But where do you actually, the depth of your values, where does that actually come from? And that's really plumbing the depths of the national soul. And that's really where I see the future of country branding or continent and regional branding.